earth turns into a dandelion clock, whose fragile seeds are blown away by a gust of wind. BBC Natural World. Flying over a wide expanse of green and brown carpeted hills.
The Highlands of Scotland have witnessed many upheavals.
Large, ragged hills dotted with trees dominate the skyline.
But they've seen nothing like what's happening in the glens north of Inverness. Here, one man is trying to realise a big idea. Paul Lister is trying to bring back wild animals that were once common in Scotland.
Paul rides a motorbike, is licked by a wolf, then strokes a moose.
Mammals such as moose, wolves, and bears that were wiped out centuries ago. His plans have produced howls of derision as well as enthusiastic support. Is he a nutcase? Or will he be hailed as a modern-day monarch of the glen? There are huge obstacles to overcome, but one thing is sure. Paul Lister is prepared to do whatever it takes to turn his patch of Scotland wild again.
Moose in the Glen, narrated by John Hannah. A river snakes along the bottom of a valley.
The Highlands of Scotland look like the very essence of wildness. Primeval and untouched.
Parts of the hills are bathed in golden sunlight, others in shadow. A lone tree stands on the sweeping slopes.
But these solitary trees are all that remain of a very different landscape.
Single trees are dotted over the hillside.
Centuries ago, these hills were cloaked in forests of Caledonian pine, but they've been stripped bare. With the timber gone, sheep took over the hills. They grazed out many of the fragile native plants, turning a once diverse landscape into a soggy desert. Even the heather is nothing but a glorified weed. It's hard to make a living here. Crofters have mostly gone, and the land is carved up between a number of large estates, these days devoted to hunting, shooting, and fishing. It may look wild, but in fact this landscape is heavily managed for the benefit of just three commercially prized animals: salmon, grouse, and red deer.
People think Scotland, or the Highlands in particular, are a beautiful place, beautiful scenery, beautiful landscape. And of course, they're right, it does look great. But if you actually know something about the history, you'll realise just how much devastation has taken place over the centuries.
Paul Lister.
There is a tantalising hint of what Scotland looked like 300 years ago in the remaining forests of northern and eastern Europe. Here, it's also possible to glimpse the animals that once lived in the Highlands. Creatures which either died out once the trees were cut down, or were hunted out. It's almost impossible to imagine moose in a glen, but long ago, they would have been as much a part of the Scottish uplands as brown bears.
A small brown bear wades through shallow water.
Each animal, right up to the top predator, would have played a vital role in keeping the woodland balanced and healthy.
A moose lies on a hillside, and a large cat strides over some rocks.
It was on a visit to Eastern Europe that businessman Paul Lister saw Scotland's potential.
A 4x4 drives along a road between a tree-covered hill and a river.
But it wasn't until 2003 that his fledgling idea could take off. Overnight, his fortunes changed as he came into control of millions of pounds made by his father, the founder of the MFI Flatpak Empire. Lister bought a 23,000-acre estate north of Inverness, where he set about challenging the centuries-old monopoly of land management.
The vehicle travels away from a large white country house.
His base is the Allerdale Lodge at the eastern end of his land.
Flying over the lodge, which sits on a hill surrounded by thick trees.
Like the surrounding sporting estates, there's grouse, thousands of red deer, and the rivers are rich in salmon. But along the two glens which stretch west from the lodge, there is very little else. Paul wants to use his fortune to create a wilderness reserve, plant trees to join up the fragmented woodland, and populate the two glens with moose, lynx, bear, and wolf, creatures that were once common here.
Paul walks along beside a gushing stream.
He thinks that people would pay to come and see this restoration process happen, and wants to prove that a rich and self-sustaining mix of native wildlife can make more money and provide more jobs than hunting and fishing.
Paul Lister.
The area I'm looking at here is one of our richest parts of the reserve, and it just needs to have back the animals that were once living here hundreds of years ago to really make the place come alive.
Trying to bring back Scotland's lost riches is not a new idea. For many decades, conservationists have discussed rewilding parts of the Highlands, and a recent European directive encourages governments to do just this.
A large bird flies across the blue sky.
Scotland has successfully reintroduced birds such as red kite and the sea eagle, but plans to bring back mammals have foundered, either because there isn't enough continuous forest to support these creatures, or because local people have objected.
A beaver chews some wood.
Although other European countries have successfully reintroduced mammals, such as beaver, Scotland is lagging behind.
It jumps down into the water and swims over to its dam.
Rewilding has proved to be so complicated, it's not surprising many people look at Lister's ambitious plans with a mixture of admiration and disbelief.
Johnny Shaw, neighbour.
Well, I started by thinking he was a nutcase. But I have to admire him for having a go. I mean, the SAS motto. He's put his purse where his mouth is, and he is trying. And I admire that immensely.
Paul is a furniture salesman, not an ecologist, so he's buying in the best advice.
Professor David MacDonald.
At Allerdale, there is the potential to do something radical, useful, important, and well-founded. The thought that there would be an owner of a Highland estate who is prepared to make the top priority of that estate the biodiversity gain and all that flows from it, the revenue generation and so forth, is a quite wonderful thought, and we should rejoice in that. And at the moment, I think we're
on course for that. But Paul's impatient to get the project off the ground. So as well as world-class expertise, he's found what he believes is the perfect blueprint for Allerdale.
There's nothing unique about what I'm proposing at Allerdale. There's nothing unique. It's literally a plagiarisation of a success story from South Africa.
Eastern Cape, South Africa. Deer graze on a misty plain. Paul looks through binoculars towards a golden horizon and a large sun that rises in speeded up time. A 4x4 drives through the landscape.
Like the Highlands of Scotland, Shamwari Game Reserve was once overgrazed and impoverished land.
A lion lazily watches them pass by. Then, a young leopard with wide, curious eyes. They pull up next to the leopard and its mother, who yawns at them while the young one growls.
The driving force behind its restoration is businessman Adrian Gardner.
10, 15 years ago, where we're driving now was farmland. This was all red, soiled, abused, overgrazed, degraded, absolutely ravaged.
Over the years, successfully, we've created a whole ecosystem here, from a dung beetle to the elephant. So we've put back the rightful owners to this land.
What's impressed Paul is that the animals have done all the hard work.
To a large extent, we've let nature repair itself. If you put the right animals on this land, yes, that helps repair it. That's
sure,
nature.
Sure.
The similarities between what we're trying to do are actually far more closer than you think.
The right animals in their original setting will go a long way to restoring the vegetation at Allerdale too. But at the start, they would have to be heavily managed. Paul and his rangers will have to learn how to monitor, dart and move grazers to help the restoration process along.
Yep. This is a very popular dart gun, so you'll most probably use this dart system at Allerdale.
Yeah.
So the dart is in there.
Oh yes, amazing.
Quite simple.
Yeah, very.
Okay, have you got a nice view of the rhino and quite a bit of east of Mkunzi?
Yeah, the one at the back now, back left.
Today they are going to dart a young rhino so they can clip an identifying mark in her ear. In a few years' time, Paul could be darting moose or bear at Allerdale.
We're going to do him, eh? On the shoulder if you get a good. Perfect. And it went in.
The rhino scatter.
FM Tinny there. Just got onto the open now on Bunzi.
So far, so good. Very slick operation.
Yeah, they've gone into the middle of a nice big open area.
Yeah.
They find the darted one.
They only have a short time before the rhino is conscious again. The vet makes a painless notch in her ear and then injects a stimulant to bring the rhino round.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Come down, come down.
It waits very quickly and struggles to its feet, then runs across the ground as the rangers all head for their vehicles.
Wow, he was up quick.
See, they're stuck in his little...
In every healthy ecosystem, grazers are only part of the story. Without predators, the grazers would overpopulate the reserve and eat out the vegetation all over again.
They watch a pride of lions.
Shamwari needs big cats, just as Allerdale needs wolves, lynx and bear. People have a long-held mistrust of predators, so many locals were outraged when Gardner welcomed lions and hyenas back.
My neighbours here were absolutely up in arms. And I can remember going to a meeting where one of the neighbours stood up and he said to me, "My grandfather shot the last brown hyena here." I said, "Well, it's a pity he's not alive, because I would be telling him I'm going to bring it back."
To keep the neighbours happy and to protect his precious animals, Gardner has built a fence around his 60,000 acres. Paul will do the same at Allerdale, but even so, Gardner thinks he will face a lot of resistance to his plans.
I think his challenges are going to be more than ours were. Ours were certainly here. I mean, we had a lot of neighbours who didn't want to accept what we were going to do, and there were struggles there, but all struggles are worth fighting for. I really hope that I will see the bear and the wolves back there.
You will.
I really hope so.
For sure.
The 4x4 disappears from view as they drive off. The sky burns golden as the sun sets and clouds float across it like thin slabs of shining silver. Back in Scotland, snow and thick grey clouds cover the mountains.
Paul is convinced the Shamwari model will work in the Highlands.
People say to me, "Oh, you know, you're here in another part of the world, isn't it?" Yes, of course, there are different parameters, but it's the same meat, different grade. It's the same principle of taking over land which has been ravaged by man and investing in it and bringing back the species that belong there.
Paul is impatient to see wolves and bear on his reserve, but like Shamwari, he needs to start with the basics. He has native grazers, but red deer are the very core of the problem. Scotland has way too many of them. Even Scottish Natural Heritage agrees that native trees and plants don't stand a chance while deer numbers remain so high. In any other setting, they'd be called a pest.
A large herd of red deer run across the snow and through a shallow river. Then they're walking over the contrastingly white hillside.
With no native predators to control them, red deer numbers have increased steadily for decades. Despite a threefold increase in culling since the 1970s, deer numbers are still on the rise.
Sunlight escapes through the cloud. A little of the snow has melted, and deer graze on browned grass.
In the interests of natural regeneration, Allerdale has halved its deer population over 10 years. The process of lowering numbers goes on every year.
Driving a 4x4 along a clear but wet and muddy road.
Throughout the season, they cull the lesser valued hinds. The challenge is to get close enough for a shot.
A man lies on the ground with a hunter's rifle as a small herd of deer run away. One falls.
Hello, Poppy.
They're thrown into the truck. Innes McNeil, head ranger at Allerdale.
They're not some bloodthirsty killer, like. It's a job that we have to do, and that's it, you know. Just get on with it.
Deer culling is something Innes and David have always had to do. But now they feel there's a goal at the end of it.
It's quite a good plan, you know.
If we get the acreage, this thing can work and create a lot more employment, and it could be quite a unique concept, you know. We're watching the project develop, you know. We're making it happen. So, bring it on.
They drive away along the muddy track through the highlands. A thin line of mist hangs lightly over the dark reds and greens of the land. Then, deer graze in sunlight as spring arrives. A bird sings on a rock, flowers bloom, and a fox bounds across the heather.
Once the deer are under control, the 80,000 saplings which Paul has planted in the valley bottoms will have a chance of reaching maturity.
Small green buds have sprouted on their numerous but thin branches.
Paul already has some stands of old-growth Caledonian pine on the reserve. But to provide food and cover for forest animals, he needs more. Pines need very specific growing conditions, so Paul has turned to a very specific animal. The arrival of a group of boar means his dream of regenerating this patch of the Highlands has already begun. Boars are walking rotavators. As they root around, they break up the blanket of heather and bracken, turn over the soil, and create a perfect seedbed for pine kernels.
Where's the big fella? Here he is, Paul.
400 years ago, boar were common in Scotland.
He's big, isn't he?
This is the first time anyone has studied what their return would do to the landscape. Paul's estate manager, Hugh Fullerton-Smith, is the man in charge of the operation.
When this opportunity arose, it kind of really intrigued me that somebody could be trying to set up a genuine wilderness reserve in the UK.
Hugh goes off on his motorbike.
It's quite powerful stuff, really, this whole rewilding concept. And I think it's long overdue from what I've seen in 12 months. It's perfect, and after a while I think you suddenly realise that you're quite privileged to be here. It's probably 100 years work here right now.
Different shots of Hugh and Paul as they go around the estate and some of the animals on it. Ducks, boars, cows and deer. Then a moose eating the leaves of a tree.
Paul knows rewilding takes time, but he's also a businessman who needs results. He wants to fast forward to the next animal on his wish list, moose, or European elk, as they are officially known. Unlike red deer, these 8-foot giants won't decimate the ground vegetation. They browse on willows and birch.
A young baby walks along unsteadily.
They've been absent from Scotland for over 2,000 years. But Paul thinks that if he had some at Allerdale, they would start drawing the public in. But shopping for them is harder than he thought.
I found moose, but the Swedish government have banned the capture of wild moose. Mm-hmm. So we've had to go to parks.
Yeah.
But they're terribly expensive. I think with all the vet testing and all the clearances to import them into Scotland, it'd be about £17,000 for 4 animals.
A weather vane with a moose on it. Sweden.
Paul decides to get on a plane and look for some himself. He wants young moose that will be able to grow up as wild as possible. And at a moose breeder's, he tracks down 2 females who are about to give birth.
Helge, Scottish visitors.
English visitor.
English, oh, sorry. I didn't know.
British visitor. Well, they're amazing, aren't they? So, I have to say, I've never been this close up to a moose before.
Here comes the boss. She's called Blenda.
This one here?
She even beats up the bull if she has to.
Right.
And she just presses down the head and then she knees them.
How close? Can you get in there with
them? No, we will go in, everyone.
No, we?
Yes, very, very tight.
We're going to go in there?
Yes, of course. This is the bigger bull.
They make horses look small. Look at that.
Oh, there you go. There you go. You like that one, boy.
I need 2 females and a male. Okay. Young ones. This
well,
year.
Well, let's have a contact and see what happens when the babies come.
Paul calls Allerdale with the good news.
I think I'd better do quite a deal with him. Anyway, this might just be the niche. And he's got a home for 2 of the babies, but not the other 3 or 4. And I suspect we just need 3 at the most.
Back in Scotland, mist rises off a copper-tinted lake as the sun rises behind the trees that line its shore.
Moose from Sweden would be a crowd puller. But Paul needs a mix of animals on the reserve.
Every animal has its part to play, and the more animals we bring back to Allerdale, the less we'll have to manage things. The less we'll have to go around, you know, planting trees and shooting deer and, you know, we can let animals play their part.
A large black bird with a white beak and red ringed eyes.
Encouraging small animals back to Allerdale is as important as the large ones. Small birds and mammals help to distribute seeds and would ultimately provide food for carnivores such as lynx and eagles. But the animal that's key to restoring the balance of the Highlands is the wolf.
One walks through a clearing.
It's also the animal with the biggest reputation.
Blue sky and fresh green grass. Yellowstone National Park, USA.
Even a huge national park like Yellowstone in the US courted controversy when they brought this particular carnivore back.
Ed Bangs.
Oh, it was very heated. I've had death threats, and I think people on the other side did too, probably. So it's a very emotional issue, very polarized. I've had hundreds of guys come up to me at meetings and tell me, my dad, my granddad killed the last wolf in this valley, this river system, this ranch, this county, this state. And they're very proud of that. And so emotionally, it's a big deal out west where the last wolves were killed only 70 or 80 years ago.
For many people, that's not long enough to begin to love an animal that was once so hated. Fear of wolves runs deep, but it's a fear that's unfounded.
Wolves have attacked people a few times in North America, but in the past 400 years, a wild wolf has never killed a person in North America. I think someday that might happen, but of all the things you have to worry about, wolves are probably just below like ground squirrels. Wolves are really not a serious threat to people.
What's more, wolves are useful. They've done a sterling job in Yellowstone of keeping destructive grazing animals in check. So much so that top British scientists have studied whether wolves could do the same for the spiralling number of Highland deer.
Professor Tim Coulson.
I think the important science we need to know is what are the likely consequences if we're going to take a species like a wolf and reintroduce it into parts of Scotland. Our predictions were that eventually, after about 60 years, deer numbers would come down to probably somewhere between a quarter of a third and where they are now, and the wolf population would plateau in the Highlands at somewhere between 300 and 500 wolves.
Eventually, predator and prey find a natural balance, and that can only be good for the whole landscape. Paul's ideas are based on sound science, but there haven't been wolves in Britain since the 1740s, and the mere mention of them creates panic.
A newspaper headline reads, "Keep out, wolves about."
Paul thinks the media are just scaremongering.
I was in Sweden the other week. There were 300 or 400 wolves. You don't read horror stories of people being eaten by wolves and bears in Europe, you know. It's just nonsense. And it's about time that people woke up to that fact. It's about time that stories like Little Red Riding Hood were put into context and people understood that wolves are absolutely terrified of man.
Hill farmers still worry that their livestock might be at risk. To allay local concerns, Lister has always made it clear that he intends to build a fence around his entire property. The scare stories are a constant frustration.
It is a misrepresentation to imagine that creating a large fenced park-like wilderness area is the same thing as liberating unfenced these animals into the freedom of the countryside. And I think I've seen myself some press coverage which has suggested a confusion between those two, which is just a pretty silly confusion, isn't it? I mean, most people can understand fence.
There's already a 500-acre enclosure for the boar, and there are plenty of safety measures to protect people from what's inside.
Hugh.
We've got a dangerous wild animal license now, so it's our job to protect the public from these animals and to protect the animals from the public as well.
But Hugh finds himself in a legal paradox. The laws protecting the public are at odds with the laws guaranteeing public access in Scotland.
Something's really strange has happened. We're from the same office that issued the dangerous wild animals license. The Highland Access Officer now insists that the public can have access to this enclosure. So we've got a pretty strange thing going on here.
Worryingly, the legal farce surrounding the pig pen has huge implications for the whole project.
Flying over a river.
The 50-mile fence, which Paul had planned to build around Allerdale, 3 metres high, specially designed, and costing £2 million, would effectively seal off his estate from the rest of the Highlands.
The fence cuts inwards from the road.
This has enraged people who fought for one of the very first acts of the new Scottish Parliament, an enforceable right to roam. Ramblers and climbers aren't up in arms over the wolves. It's the fence.
To keep these animals in place, if you like, he wants to build a fence, electrified, to create a massive enclosure for these animals. Now, one, that's not rewilding. That's creating a zoo. And two, people like myself and many, many others have fought for generations for this Land Reform Act, for the legislation that we now have in Scotland. And for somebody just to helicopter into an area like Allerdale and say, I'm going to build this great big fence and to hell with your Land Reform Act, I don't care about your access, I want to keep people out, I want to keep my animals in. And that attitude I find morally repugnant.
Cameron McNeish.
The fence has become very divisive. What Paul thought would be the solution to people's fear of wild animals is becoming his biggest problem.
There are some people who don't want to see any fences. And there are other people who don't want a fence because they don't want to be stopped walking on that side. I worry that because of the access legislation, it may be impossible to do this experiment. And I would be very sad about that. I think that we need places for nature. I don't see why humans have to go everywhere.
Even though Allerdale is becoming embroiled in access issues, they still have to get on with managing the animals that are already penned up here. At least Hugh is making progress with the boar.
They herd the boar into a specially designed pen and trap it inside. They put a collar around its neck and secure it on.
Yesterday we put radio tracking collars on 7 of the boar. That's really going along nicely. So the pigs are going really well.
The radio collars will help Chris, who's in charge of the boar research, to work out how much land each pig needs. This becomes particularly important when, in early summer, the enclosure welcomes new arrivals.
A group of baby boar run to suckle their mother.
These are the first animals to be born at Allerdale, and the first that will be brought up in the wild.
The mother sniffs, and a baby tugs at some grass.
Now that the boar seem well established, it's time for Hugh to organise the next stage of the project.
We're definitely going ahead with an import of elk on September the 15th. Just going to bring a bull and two young females. So that's pretty exciting. The rewilding will happen here, no doubt about that. It's just the timing of us establishing this big reserve, because the complexities of doing it are probably escape Paul a little.
Paul has overlooked a fundamental issue. In the eyes of the law, a fence around his reserve would change the nature of the Allerdale project.
Colin Galbraith, Scottish National Heritage.
We in Scottish National Heritage are remitted and interested in wildlife when it's in the wild. When you put a big fence around an area, technically and legally, it's not then in the wild. And I think the development here at Allerdale would need then to be covered by the zoo legislation. As I understand it, there would be issues about animal welfare, the survival and well-being of individual animals as part of what happens inside this enclosed area.
Allerdale is huge, but if it's classed as a zoo, it would then be illegal to put a predator and its prey in the same enclosed space. And this would completely undermine Paul's grand plan. If the Highlands are to be properly restored, he thinks it's vital for all the animals to live together.
It's the wolves that will keep the red deer away from the valley bottoms where the rivers are, where we need vegetation on the riverbanks. We don't have that anymore up here. You know, it's important spawning grounds for the salmon. It's, you know, for the whole cycle of life, it's very important to have as many of the creatures back that were once here.
Although this is encouraged by EU legislation, national laws are threatening to stop his ambitious rewilding scheme in its tracks.
There's a clash of legislation here. Article 22 of the UEC Habitats Directive encourages people to go through species and habitat restoration. And that means that you have an ambition to get wolves and bear and lynx back into Scotland. And the Zoo Act basically prevents that happening by saying that you cannot have predator and prey in the same enclosure, which basically flies in the face of this whole proposal.
We have managed to surround ourselves in so much red tape with regard to things that you can and cannot do. We're not a zoo, we're not a Longleat, we're not a private collection of animals. What are we? Well, we are a wilderness reserve. We are like a nature reserve with a fence around it. So there isn't a box for us.
Looking out over the green hills and a river running through them.
Perhaps the only way forward is to challenge the legislation and make his reserve much, much larger. No one quite knows how big it should be, but everyone agrees that its current size is too limiting.
Roy Dennis.
It's undoubtedly too small. You know, the original thought was it needed 50,000 acres. If you had less than 50,000 acres, then you would say that the deer are too much a disadvantage against fence lines for the wolves. So you can't do that. It has to be big.
Even the trial boar enclosure may be too small. The pigs are doing a great job breaking up the bracken and heather, but the roots of one of the old-growth pine trees have been damaged in the process. Proof that there's still lots to learn about even the basics of Highland restoration.
Broken tree roots protrude from the earth, and boar walk through boggy waters around it.
In August, there's an unexpected setback. An outbreak of foot and mouth has been confirmed in England, and the government, nervous of an epidemic, has put a blanket ban on all movements of livestock.
Yeah, well, I'll call the Swedish Trades Council. They might take a real interest in it.
Hugh has to cancel the import of the moose.
They're going to really stick this one out because they got so much egg on their face last time letting any movements take place at all. They're absolutely paranoid. The good old foot and mouth has erupted again. Looks like the second case will be confirmed today. There's no real ban on importing stock. You just can't move them once they get to England. So we just obviously have to wait for the ban to be lifted before we can begin the import.
Paul's 4x4 drives up a narrow, stony road.
Nothing like Allerdale has been attempted in Britain before. So right from the start, Paul's had to come to terms with setbacks as well as missed opportunities.
At the very beginning, he had a chance to buy the next door estate. You know, that was more money, but my view is, if you're very wealthy and you buy an estate, you're not losing money. You know, you can always sell it again sometimes. So if that other estate had been bought then, that would have made it easier.
Paul now has to either wait for adjoining land to come on the market or encourage his neighbours, who all run sporting estates, to come on board. A group of Highland estates with the same vision would create enough space for rewilding. But there's a lot of persuading to do.
I wouldn't want the fences, it's not possible without the fences, but I wouldn't want it here. But I admire him for having a go. My own opinion is that it needs nearer a quarter million acres than 25,000. And then I think you might be getting somewhere.
There are some problems, not least with the fencing. Both in extremely bad weather in the winter, and also on the human side with the antis and vandals cutting in, and then if a whole lot of wolves or bears escape, well, it would make life interesting.
You know, before he came along, there was just the traditional sporting estate and the crofters. Long term, to keep people in the Highlands, you've got to keep trying new things as well.
I think we all feel the same as Johnny has said. Good on you for having a go. It's creating a lot of jobs, and you never know, it might be right.
Paul Lister.
Yeah, like a lot of people who have a vision, it's never simple, is it? You know, I mean, how many people have had ideas that have really required a lot of energy, effort, communication, and ultimately support? What has to happen is that people have to start to appreciate and believe and trust in what we're trying to achieve.
By September, with the moose importation still on hold, Paul flies to the other side of the world for a much-needed dose of inspiration and support.
Argentina. A small plane comes into land.
This is part of the biggest rewilding project on the planet. 100 times larger than Allerdale. Just like the Highlands, this part of Argentina was once in a mess. Former cattle ranches that were badly overgrazed. Paul has come to see Chris and Doug Tompkins, who have sunk their time, energy, and considerable fortune into allowing large areas within Argentina and Chile to regenerate. The first in a long line of native species they hope to reintroduce is the giant anteater.
Christine Tompkins.
We have a whole quarantine center that we built over on the other side of the wetlands. Now we have a male in this pen and a female in the other one. In 3 weeks' time, we're going to let them go and they'll be released as a pair. Our goal was to release 7 this year. So it's slow going, you know, you'd love to release 50, but this is the first formal reintroduction of a species in Argentina, so we wanted to act as a model for this kind of work for the future.
Like Paul, the Tompkins have had to learn by trial and error. They've had setbacks, but they've soldiered on, firm in the belief that turning the land wild is the best thing to do.
They ride a boat over a river.
Look at this southern screamer with its chicks. You know, I think people tend to protect those things they love and the things that are meaningful to them. And that, in this case, is wildness for us.
Flying over the marshy countryside.
Doug and Chris made their money from the outdoor clothing companies Esprit, Patagonia and North Face. It allowed them to buy 2.2 million acres of degraded land. But once the rewilding is complete, they intend to gift large areas of land back to the government, so that they can be run as national parks.
If you're in conservation work, it's an endless job, never be finished. You would like to live forever to keep doing it because it's fascinating and interesting work, and very satisfying, especially restoration work, which we do a lot of damaged landscapes.
Doug Tompkins.
I think you have to get possessed, and Paul maybe is possessed by this too, that wildness is the thing to go for.
It's inspirational, really. For me, to come down here and meet the Tompkins and what they're doing is great, you know. It's places like this that I get inspiration from. But the real challenge now is to get more neighbours and landowners or acquire more land and ultimately get the large carnivores back. And that's a real challenge, is to get the land, and I'm hopeful.
Back in Scotland.
In the autumn, Paul hears rumours that a neighbouring estate of 37,000 acres is up for sale. If he can secure a deal, he would have enough land to realise his dreams. There's more good news in November. The two young moose are finally on their way from Sweden.
We plan to import these animals in September. Along came foot and mouth disease, which put a spanner firmly in the works, followed hot on the heels by blue tongue. That meant that we couldn't come into the port that we chose near Grimsby. And so we've been waiting for them to sort of remove the restrictions, which they haven't done on the blue tongue. So we managed to solve everything by chartering a plane in Inverness, and we can fly direct to Umeå and straight back to Inverness, which is just going to be amazing.
The plane pulls slowly into a hangar. Someone sits in a wooden crate with the sleeping moose. It's carried into a horse box and the gate shut. Then it's standing looking out over it. The second moose is carried into the box.
Roger.
Paul watches with a smile.
Beautiful, aren't they?
Back at Allerdale, the moose are standing in the open air together, eating from a small sapling.
Moose have been absent from the Highlands for over 2,000 years. But these two appear to fit right back in.
They seem perfectly content and at ease.
Every animal plays a part, and of course, it's just like a giant jigsaw puzzle. Having two elk back, it's just another piece back in the jigsaw.
For the time being, they're in an enclosure, but eventually they'll have the run of the reserve.
They stand side by side, looking out over the hills. One of them shakes its big, thick coat.
It's taken 4 years and millions of pounds just to get boar and moose back onto his land. Many have criticised Paul's approach, but he's the only person bold enough to take on the problems, the doubters, and the red tape. And despite all the odds, he remains determined to create the first wilderness reserve in Britain.
A stag chases a deer, then looking out over the Highlands.
Maybe it takes a maverick to move the boundaries and wake people up to the urgency and importance of rewilding.
I believe we should encourage the likes of Paul Lister. I believe what he's trying to do is ambitious. I don't know whether it will succeed, but I think it actually contributes substantially to the debate. So if people are trying to rewild areas within an enclosed area, and that is studied, and we're collecting scientific information about the way the ecosystem changes, then I think that's a very valuable contribution to this debate about the use of our countryside and about ways in which we can help conserve some of these species that may otherwise be lost.
Professor Tim Coulson, co-author of the Royal Society's Wolf Report.
However, there are many people who still think Paul is misguided.
Paul has seen what's happened in Africa. He's thought this could happen in Scotland. I would say it can't.
Cameron McNeish. Then, David MacDonald.
Frankly, although I fully understand the view that says this simply can't happen, it's too big an ask, I don't believe it.
There's always going to be people out there that go, this isn't going to work, he's a crackpot, this, that and the other. But as long as I can get the majority, and as long as the majority of people can see what we're trying to achieve here, then it will happen. Totally it will happen.
Paul sits looking out over a glen covered in thick bush and trees.